Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants. Price may vary.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Plus, auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Quote now at Progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations. Welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the Pod of Thunder and Rock and Roll. And Duff McKagan calling in the joke of the week from South America.
Chris Jericho, Duff McKagan calling you from the Amazon. Yes, I'm in Manaus, Brazil, in the Amazon. Hey, listen, do you know the difference between black-eyed peas and chickpeas? Black-eyed peas can sing you a song. Chickpeas can hum us one. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Another classic from Duff. He and Guns N' Roses are now in Brazil. I love following them around the world via his jokes. GNR getting ready to headline the Rock in Rio Festival tomorrow, September 8th. They have a bunch of dates in South America, and they head to Mexico next month, followed by Asia, Australia, and New Zealand before the end of the year. All right, today on the show, I've got Alan Angels, formerly of AEW's Dark Order. He just left AEW a few months ago. He'll tell us why he made that choice, why I recommended it, and why I endorse it, and what he has planned for his future, and some of the matches he's already got lined up at Impact and New Japan. He's also talking about his journey to AEW, how the pandemic was really a blessing in disguise for him, what it was like to be part of the 30-match filming day in Atlanta, the day before the original pandemic shut down. I was the commentator for all those matches. He also explains how he ended up in the Dark Order and what it was like to work with Brody Lee, the late, great Brody Lee. He talks about the skits they all did for being the elite, what inspired them, and how they were finally able to get Brody to take part in them. He has stories about training in the Nightmare Factory with QT Marshall, working a match on Dynamite against Kenny Omega, the most controversial match, yet one that made Alan's career. And what it was like to be in his hometown with his dad and girlfriend at ringside while wrestling Bryan Danielson. It is Alan Angels, number 5 on Talk is Jericho, starting now. Here right now with Alan Angels. And it's interesting because it's funny, in the last probably 3 years or 2.5 years, I think we probably talked maybe 5 times. Yeah. And it always takes something like this to get a chance to sit down and talk. But it's interesting to me because you have kind of made a decision in your career, which as soon as I saw it, I thought, good for you. And I'll let you decide. I'll let you explain exactly what you did.
Yeah, yeah. Well, first of all, Chris, I just want to say, big fan of the show.
Oh, cool.
Talk to Jericho got me through my 9-to-5s before AEW.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it was like my go-to.
Well, there you go. Now you're on.
I know, dude. It's crazy. Yeah, man, I just decided that, maybe it was time to... So, I was told they weren't going to renew my contract about 45 days before it was up. Mm-hmm. And basically, they just weren't going to give me the same deal.
Right.
They were going to give me a per-appearance deal.
Gotcha.
If I wanted it. And I kind of just... I figured that maybe I had reached the limit of where I could get... here right now at this run in my career, this point in my career. I'm so young, you know. I came into AEW as virtually a nobody. I'd wrestled maybe 3 years doing the Southeast circuit and stuff.
How old are you now?
24.
Gosh, wow. Yeah,
yeah. I got signed at 22. So you know, I had grown, I built up a little bit of a following on the internet and stuff like that, but I feel like there was a perception of me, and I know a lot of people hate this word, but like I was kind of like the jobber of the Dark Order, the bottom guy mm-hmm. on the Dark Order. And I feel like when fans build up that perception of you, I think it's kind of hard to change that, if that makes sense. I think it's, you know, once that's decided, once they get that there's no changing it. Unless, like, you know, gradually you build up. But, like, I feel like in AEW that would have taken a really long time, if that makes sense.
It makes perfect sense. So what was kind of finally the final straw for you to go?
I don't know if there was a final straw. I think it was just I kind of realized that I could do a lot more on the indies and or other companies. I could really build up my name doing that as opposed to just staying here and kind of doing the same thing over and over and over again.
It's smart. Like there's a great movie by Quentin Tarantino called Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Oh, I love that movie. Yeah.
Okay, so I love the part where Mr. Schwartz, Al Pacino, is telling DiCaprio that you can continue being the heavy in these TV movies and get beat up and lose every time, and then you lose kind of your leading man perception. And that's kind of what you're saying, because it's once again, you did a great job. You get signed out of nowhere, get TV time for the next 2 years or 3 years, whatever it is. But when you reach that limit, you got to take a chance. And it's kind of scary at first to take that chance. So were you kind of nervous to do that? Or were you committed to, like, this is the way to go?
Yeah, I was definitely nervous. I was more nervous, like, financially, because now it's like, if I get hurt, then I'm not getting paid. You know, I can't do these indie shows. You know, I could do signings and stuff like that, but my main goal right now is my main focus is to wrestle. So if I get hurt, you know, I'm not getting paid. Mm-hmm. So that's the scariest part. But I think besides that, I'm more excited than anything. You know what I mean? I'm excited to, you know, just travel the world. I was telling my friend the other day, his name's AC Mack and he's an independent wrestler. And I told him, I said, you know, I kind of pictured my career going how his career is going. He's currently the independent wrestling champion. And we started about the same time. We did the Southeast circuit, and now he's getting booked more and more places slowly but surely. I kind of pictured my career going how his career is going how, like, your career went and Eddie's career went.
Right.
I always pictured myself, like, traveling all over the world and doing all these different things before I ever got signed anywhere. But luckily, I got scooped up by AEW at the right time.
So let's kind of go back then through your career. So when you got signed, you'd only been in the business for a few years.
Yeah, about three.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. So and once again, you hadn't had a chance to really go overseas anywhere. Because when you got signed too, was you know, we'll talk about the whole story, but it was right at the beginning of the lockdown.
Yeah.
So you really couldn't go anywhere. So actually, it was the perfect time for you to get that contract.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I feel like one thing I didn't really... Like, over these past few weeks, you know, ever since I got released, I didn't really get to say this, but, like, I appreciate Tony and AEW so much for picking me up when they did, because I had, like, no plan. When I got signed, I had, like, less than $100 in my bank account, you know? It's, like, one of those things where it's just, like, I had no idea what I was going to do. I had just gotten laid off because of COVID. So, like, I had no idea. I had no plan. And luckily, like, I appreciate Tony and AEW so much for picking me up and giving me the chance to... wrestle on a big stage and show what I can do and just, like, help me and everybody else that, you know, got signed during the pandemic and just giving us a chance to wrestle and show what we can do, you know.
And I'll say this too, you're not the only one that got offered a per appearance deal after their contract was done. Mm-hmm. Happened to quite a few guys, because once again, now the first couple of years of AEW is over. There's a lot more, you know, CM Punk is here now and Adam Cole is here and Brian Danielson is here. So it's not like a cut down on you. It's just kind of like the way that the whole financial contract scene went in AEW. So just for people listening to have to understand that. But so let's talk about when you first got into the business then. So were you a fan your whole life?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Since I was like 7 years old. I was actually, my dad watched it when I was like a little kid, but I told my preschool teacher to know her role and shut her mouth. So then I wasn't allowed to watch for a few years, and I think I was just like skimming through the channels one day and ended up watching SmackDown or something like that, and the rest is history, you know.
So when you start out for wrestling, because you're not the tallest guy, was that something that you ever thought of, like, am I big enough to do this? That was always my thing, like, am I big enough to do this? Because your perception is that, well, not so much now, but especially back then, was that everybody's got to be 6'8", 300 pounds of solid muscle to even make a mark in the business.
Yeah, oh, definitely. I mean, like, everybody was super tall or, you know, or jacked or something, you know, and there was like the Rey Mysterios, who was like my original first favorite wrestler, right. Of course, you know. But then I think what really like changed my mind into like, oh, I can do this. And this was maybe 2 years before I
was old enough to start wrestling was Bryan Danielson winning the World Heavyweight Championship at WrestleMania. Like, to me, that was like, okay, like, this guy is about my size. Like, I think I can really do this. You know what I mean? Like, it, like, I don't think Bryan even realizes how many people he's inspired. Sure. by just coming in and just being like a quote unquote normal guy and, you know, main eventing WrestleMania against like the main like WWE guys, Batista and Randy Orton. You know what I mean? Like, so I think
the epitome of what WWE wrestling exactly. should look like against, right. you know, I think Vince called him, he said, looks like a librarian.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's like the whole, you build a wrestler from the ground up. It's yeah. going to look like Randy Orton. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's not going to look like Bryan Danielson, but that night, you know, I think he, you know, he really inspired a lot of people like myself that are smaller and that, you know, maybe don't have the stereotypical pro wrestler look mm-hmm. that they can do this.
I remember I waited in line at World of Wheels in Winnipeg about 1987 or so to meet Ricky Steamboat. And I've told the story before, but I had like one question. I can ask one question. I'm going to have time because I was watching. The people get about a minute with him. I can ask something. And the brilliant line that I asked was what I really wanted to know was, how tall are you? I really wanted to know.
Yeah.
Because he said, I'm about 5'11", 230 pounds. I'll never forget that. And I'm like, 5'11"? I'm 5'11". Ricky Steamboat, my favorite wrestler, is 5'11". Yeah. So I get that where you see somebody, obviously he was jacked to the gills, but still, mm-hmm. you could see somebody that's in your, you know, wavelength and in your wheelhouse of your size. And that does give you inspiration for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's one of my favorite. And Bryan's like one of my favorites of all time. So yeah. like, yeah, it's great.
So how did you get into the business then?
So I started out, you know, just Googled pro wrestling schools online.
Are you from Atlanta?
I am. Yeah. Gotcha. From Atlanta. So I started, at a school in Atlanta. It's called the WWA4, run by AR Fox. Still is. And I trained there for maybe 2.5 years. I definitely trained there for the first year. And then I started going to the Nightmare Factory, what's now known as the Nightmare Factory, which is the Power Factory back then, just run by QT at the time. And I started going there on and off, and eventually, and that's how I ended up getting the gig at being an extra on the AEW Dynamites. They were filmed in Norcross. They were right down yeah. the street, actually, like about 15
minutes. How many matches did you have?
I had a good amount. I mean, I've been wrestling about 3 years, so gotcha. Maybe 150.
But just mostly in this area?
Yeah, yeah. Georgia, Alabama, Florida, North Carolina, South Carolina, Tennessee, like that area. I'd done a few things up north, but like it's very hard to, especially when you're first starting out, to get out of like a certain area mm-hmm. now, you know, because you either have to make that drive or you have to fly out there. And as an indie wrestler, like, you don't really have money to buy the flight. So unless the promoter is going to do it for you, then it's kind of hard. And it's hard to build up that name, you know?
So you're just kind of riding the roads, making towns, getting as much experience as you can.
Oh yeah, dude. Like I said, I imagine myself like being like the stereotypical, like living in my car, like wrestler, you know what I mean? Just starting out. Just, I wanted to live that life. You know what I mean? I wanted to just like live out of my car and just like ride the roads and do all that stuff.
What was the worst show that you did in that time frame?
Probably the first indie show that I ever did. There was about 7 of us packed in a car, and we drove about 7 hours to a town called Dyersburg, Tennessee for I think it was called DXW. Yeah. And it was like in a chute barn, like an actual barn. There was hay on the floor, just like a low boy ring, you know, just the worst ropes of all time. We got paid like, I think $20 each or something like that. That's actually not the least I've ever been paid. So
what's the least you've ever paid?
What's that?
What's the least you've ever been paid besides free?
One time I got paid in a $5 bill, and it was supposed to go to me and my tag partner. And they just gave me the $5 bill. So we're supposed to split it, I guess.
$2.50 each, buddy.
Yeah, right?
My worst payoff ever was the same as actually our trainer somehow conned us into doing a kid's birthday party.
Nice.
Which was a good one.
Been there.
In a Quonset, which is like a barn, like a uh-huh. Canadian like horse barn. Uh-huh. And we got paid a hot dog and a glass of orange juice.
Nice.
That was a good payoff.
Yeah, that is a good payoff. Dude, it's a free meal, you know?
Yeah, exactly, right? You're going to spend it anyways. All right, you guys know that I travel every week for AEW, and I'm on the road for Fozzy as well. But I don't worry about appliances or any of the stuff at my house breaking down while I'm gone, because we've got American Home Shield. And truthfully, I'm not a fix-it-myself guy anyways. So even if I was home and we had a leaky faucet or a faulty water heater, I'm not the one who's going to fix it. And unexpected breakdowns like that won't break your bank with American Home Shield warranty, because covered repairs and replacements are taken care of just like that. You just choose a plan that works for you and your budget. And then when a covered item in your home breaks, contact American Home Shield and their trusted and qualified pros will fix or replace it based on the coverage in your agreement. Right now, you can get 20% off. Just go to ahs.com/Jericho and save that 20%. That's ahs.com/Jericho for 20% off any plan. American Home Shield, don't worry, be warranty. See ahs.com/contracts for coverage details, including limit amounts, fees, limitations, and exclusions. New Jersey residents, the product being offered is a service contract and is separate and distinct from any product or service warranty, which may be provided by the home or building manufacturer. So let's talk about the day when you finally came to AEW, because this was pretty crazy. I'll set the stage. We did TV, I think, in Jacksonville. And then there was a big kind of warning that Florida and Georgia were shutting down at midnight the next day. And I remember I called Tony after the because I was off that week. It's the week that I can't remember what I did. Oh, when Matt Hardy had his drone, and I did a pre-tape at my house where me and my dogs chased the drone away. And so we were trying to think of and the next week I was supposed to do commentary as we were kind of putting together what we're going to do. So I called Tony and he's like, yeah, we got to go to Atlanta and we got to do 30 matches. We got to do 5 weeks of TV. And I was like, I'll be there. He goes, you're going to be there? I was like, well, first of all, from a selfish standpoint, I don't think I've ever told this story. I can't be off TV for 5 weeks. Right. I can't. I got to be involved. 5 weeks is a lifetime in wrestling. So I'll go and I was supposed to do commentary the next weekend. I'll just do commentary for all the matches. He said, well, that's perfect because Excalibur can't make it. California guys can't make it. So I flew in the next day and got ready to do commentary with Tony Schiavone for 30 matches. So that's my side of the story. Tell us how that worked out for you.
Yeah. So it was one of those things, like you said, a lot of the people that were supposed to fly in couldn't fly in because I think most of the airports were shut down or whatever. Yeah. So really the only people that could come were the people that could drive.
Florida people and Georgia people, basically.
Right, yeah. I think a few New York people came down, but
not many, yeah. Yeah, Darby, no. Or yeah, not many. Yeah. Sammy came from Texas, I remember that.
Right,
that
yeah. So yeah, we did a live Dynamite, I think the first day, where I ended up wrestling QT and Dustin. And it was me and Vance, and we were in full body Dark Order outfits.
Was that prior? Was that you actually? Oh, were you like a Dark Order?
It was a Dark Order,
like a minion.
Yeah. But we didn't. We both had full body outfits on. Gotcha. So you couldn't see my tattoos. You couldn't see how jacked he was. You know.
Right.
So nobody. I don't think anybody really knew it was us, except for maybe a few people on the internet or whatever, just kind of guessing.
So were you Dark Order guys before that? Prior?
Yeah, we actually did before the pandemic. We did a few of the creeper things where. We just wore the mask and we were just nameless, faceless.
Well, before
guys.
We get to this, let's talk about that a bit. So yeah. What were some of the things that you do? Were you involved in the famous?
No.
Okay.
No. Before you even asked, no, I was not involved in that.
Famous beatdown.
No, I wasn't involved in that one. But we did a bunch of, we were at Full Gear, that whole loop in 2019, and we did a few creeper things. I actually also threw the water at MJF, if you remember that, the beer.
Oh.
After he dick kicked Cody.
Oh,
I was
right.
The one that threw the, and I got pulled out by security. So I was, that was me.
Oh, you were delegating. This is still when we had people.
Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah. So yeah, we did the creeper things a few times. And then when the Norcross tapings happened, we wrestled a match and we wrestled QT and Dustin. And I think that was on a live Dynamite.
I think that there was no live ones from Norcross or was there?
I don't think you were there the first day. There was 2 days. I don't think you were there the first day.
Oh, okay.
Cause we just did a live Dynamite and maybe a few dark matches.
Gotcha.
The second day, was when we did the 30 or 40 matches or whatever.
Oh, okay. So maybe that's what it was. It wasn't Jacksonville. It was Atlanta where you did the live Dynamite. And that's when I had sent in the drone thing with the dogs. Okay. So that was in Atlanta and Norcross.
I think there was also another Jacksonville taping before that.
Gotcha.
And then the Norcross tapings was the second week.
So there was a live Dynamite from Norcross.
Yes. Yeah. Gotcha. Okay. I believe so. I'm pretty sure. I could be remembering wrong.
You could be right.
Sure.
I think so. Yeah.
And so, yeah, then the second day, so that night, QT comes up to me and he says, I think you might wrestle Kenny tomorrow. And I'm like, bro, why would you tell me that? I would rather just like show up and you tell me then. So now, of course, I can't sleep. I go home and I like couldn't sleep. The gym isn't open. So I'm like freaking out. I had like hardly worked out at all in the last like 2 weeks because the gyms were shut down. Luckily, I have like dumbbells in my basement. So I pretty much just stayed up all night working out, like just getting ready for this Kenny match. And then we got there, you know, we did the long taping. We were one of the first few matches, and I wrestled Kenny. And
How was it with Kenny? Like to set the scene there.
Oh man, it was crazy. I found him and he said, yeah, man, come to my trailer and we'll talk about it. We talked about it. And as we're talking about it, I'm like, I don't know if this is going to be 4 minutes because we only had 4 minutes, but I was like, I don't know if this is going to be 4 minutes, but you know, if anybody can do it, it's Kenny, you know?
Classic Kenny could care less, right? He was on a mission to make you look good, it seemed.
And you know, I think it was because, and I don't know, I've never actually talked to him about this, but I think it was partially because a few months prior we had done, and you were at this as well, at Southern Honor. I don't know if you remember.
I didn't know that you were there.
Yeah, yeah. Me and Kenny did like a whole spot where I think you came out first, did a whole thing, and then
I attacked. I think Dustin. No, what's his name? What's his name? The big arm heat, the guy with the giant arms.
Sure.
No, he works here. He,
oh yeah, yeah.
What's his name?
Dylan.
Yeah. Dylan. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sunny Days.
Sunny Days. That's it. Yeah, I came out and attacked Sunny Days. Uh-huh. So let's just this. I had no idea.
I know.
So Southern Honor Wrestling is run by Pastor Gary.
Right. Yeah.
And the Action Center in Canton, it's his church. Uh-huh. It's also Fozzy's rehearsal room.
Right. Yeah.
So that's where we rehearse.
We filmed the music video.
It wasn't Judas that we filmed, but we filmed Burn Me Out there. Uh-huh. And we filmed Painless behind in the back alley there.
Okay.
So this is when we were just appearing at different places prior to having TV.
Kind of promoting AEW almost. Yeah.
Yeah. The Bucks were doing it. They show up at Defy or whatever.
So here's what happens. You come out, I think something happens, then Kenny comes out, he bumps you or something, and then I attack Kenny from behind. And me and Kenny run a whole little spot. He gets me up for the one-winged angel. You come in, chop block him, and me and you beat down Kenny Omega.
No shit.
Yep, wow. 100%.
That's great.
Yeah, yeah. There's a whole video of it if you want to watch it. But
I remember that now. I remember that.
Yeah,
Because wasn't... Was the cat? Was Sean Dean there, or was it Baron Black? Or there was a couple of the cats.
Yeah, there was a few of us. Yeah, Lee Johnson was there.
Lee Johnson, I believe. That was who was there. Yeah,
yep. And yeah, so I think because we did all that and the spot that we ran, it was a short little thing, but like it went well. I gave him like an NZ, and you know we did.
He got
whole
a feel
thing.
For you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think maybe he maybe trusted me or mm-hmm. something like that, and maybe that's why he made me look as good as he did. I'm not sure.
So you're going over the match and you're realizing this is not going to be 4 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. And it wasn't like too much longer. I think it went about 6:30 or something like that, which everybody online is always like, oh, why did Kenny Omega go 15 minutes with this guy? Yeah. No, it was literally like 6 minutes, you know? But yeah, and I'm super grateful for him. And like, I owe my career to like three or four people. And I think Kenny's definitely on that list. So
talk about the match. What were some of the things that you got to do? Because I remember calling it. Mm-hmm. And like, so
called me Alan Eagles.
Alan Eagles. And, and one of the reasons for that is I remember we had such a thin roster. Uh-huh. And so many of the Baron Blacks and Alan Angels and guys that I'd never heard of. And I'm assuming that probably people are watching TV. And so trying to give identities right away. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to make people under like who is this guy? Well, he's Alan, because there's a famous lawyer in NHL history, hockey history, called Alan Eagleson, who ripped off all the players. Uh-huh. And he's one of my dad's most hated guys. So my dad played in the NHL at the time. Alan Eagleson ripped us off. So that's Alan awesome. Angels, Alan Eagles, Alan Eagleson. So in my mind, at least I was trying to interject some personality.
Yeah, you did that for a few guys.
Not that you didn't have it, but I wanted people to see like, oh, this guy's a guy. Even though we've never seen him. Yes, he's Alan Eagles. He's Alan Angels. He's good. So anyways, I think Kenny had that attitude from a wrestling standpoint of wanting people to know who you were.
Yeah, it was a lot of like asking me like what I wanted to do, what I do, and all this stuff. I had this one spot that I really liked where he hits me with something and I'm going to crawl out of the ring, and I grab the ring skirt and I pull it in. As he's pulling me back in, I push him off, I roll to the outside, and he steps on the ring skirt and I pull it out from under him. And I was like, oh, I think that's cool. I think maybe like, you know, nobody's ever seen that. And if they have, like, you know, it's been a long time. So I think stuff like that, like, also made me stand out, as opposed to I personally think that I am like fairly decent at wrestling. So
yeah,
like,
absolutely.
So, you know, I don't think it was just Kenny putting me over, which he did. He did
but
great.
But you have
and
to be good too.
Exactly.
Though.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. And going back to this, I think that's another reason I kind of wanted to leave, so that I could show exactly how I can have these 15, 20 minute matches on shows that might not be as big as AEW, but people see these things, and if people start to realize how good I actually am, how good I think I am, then I think.
But that's a smart move, because once again, like, and that's why I always say, like, you never know who's watching. And like you mentioned, showing up in Canton, you know, at Southern Honor Wrestling, and you didn't know you'd be doing a spot with Kenny Omega, and he probably didn't even know. Let's do something together. And then you went. He probably said, "This guy's got some style here. Mm-hmm. He's got some ability." So when you have this match, because I remember the match. Well, first of all, the match was really good, but I remember, like, once again, people will complain about everything and anything. People being so mad that Kenny Omega would, you know, like you said, go 15 minutes with this no-name guy. But that's what wrestling's all about. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember I did that with Maven when I was the Undisputed Champion. And it was like people thought that Maven was actually going to win at one point. I mean, like,
Maven eliminating Taker from the
there
Rumble.
There you go. You know, it's like, why are you, us cheating to beat Darby in week three? Like, why would you cheat to beat this no-name Darby, who was a no-name at the time? Yeah. Well, because that's what wrestling is. You build guys. We had to cheat to beat this guy, and that starts his rise, you know. And Kenny went 6.5 minutes with you and put you over, and you deserved it. But it's like, this is what wrestling's all about, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think maybe I wasn't totally ready for, you know, the big time, quote unquote, big time, you know. But I think at the time I did have, you know, something that I wanted to show. So, and he let me do that.
And so I remember, because that was near the beginning, mm-hmm. and then once again, this marathon day, then you go into the crowd cheering too, right?
Yeah. So I go back to the locker room, I change back into my regular stuff so I can go in the crowd. And it was a whole complicated thing, because there's four episodes. If you're on this episode, you can't be in the crowd cheering, all that stuff. Yeah. So, you know, you had to figure that out. But so I change back into my regular clothes. I come back out. As soon as I come back out, someone comes up to me, hey, can you do another match? Can you wrestle Lance Archer? I was like, yeah, absolutely. So I have to go back and change. And I had the match with Lance, but yeah.
Because I remember you were out there, Anna was out there.
Mm-hmm. It was, there was me, Anna, I think Lee Johnson, you know, Cody Vance was out there, Preston Vance.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. There was a bunch of guys, like so many. There was a few guys that ended up getting signed that were at that taping. So
we had like about 15 people in the crowd. That was it. And I remember the Gun Club was just starting. I remember, yeah. I mean, the Shug D, the Pineapple Pete, that whole thing started.
We're
just trying anything we can to keep the ball rolling. Because little did we know, like, Tony had the foresight to film all that. But I remember thinking, like, well, just show some reruns or show some highlights. And he's like, I can't show reruns and highlights. This is live TV. We have to put on a show.
Yeah.
And just didn't realize, you know, how dire it was that we did all those matches and we had all that stuff happening, because it really kept the company alive.
Yeah. I think it's something that's never, hopefully, is never going to happen again, you know?
Yeah. I know Tony always says that 29% of the roster
was
available there, right? I have to say a quick thank you to Pretty Litter, because it's been so peaceful at my house lately. Nobody's fighting over cleaning the litter boxes, and nobody's complaining about how bad it smells where we keep the litter boxes. Pretty Litter's altered absorbent crystals trap odor instantly, and the crystals last up to a month, so less scooping out of the box. And best part, Pretty Litter changes colors to help monitor early signs of potential illness in our cats, including urinary tract infections and kidney issues. It ships right to our door, so no last-minute trips to the store when we realize we're all out of cat litter. It's a win-win for my family, and it's a win-win for Mr. Mittens, Indy, and Snickers, my three cats. You and your cat or cats are going to love Pretty Litter as much as we do. It helps keep tabs on your cat's health and keeps odors down. Go to prettylitter.com/Jericho and use the code Jericho to save 20% on your first order. That's prettylitter.com/Jericho. Code Jericho to save 20%. prettylitter.com/Jericho. Code Jericho. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details. So how did you end up getting signed, the actual contract offer?
So, you know, I had the match with Kenny. I wrestled Lance. And then, so all that aired about a month later. We're doing more tapings in Jacksonville. So I go down to Jacksonville. I ended up wrestling Phoenix in still one of my favorite AEW matches. Phoenix is amazing.
Best athlete.
Yeah, so amazing. And then I also wrestled, and then the next day I wrestled Sammy.
Another great athlete.
Yeah, right. So I had those two matches.
I'm assuming both of them went well.
Yeah, I'd like to think so. Yeah. So yeah, we had those two matches, and then between the next tapings, I was told that Tony wanted to keep bringing me in and stuff, and then the next taping, I was offered a contract, offered a deal. So yeah,
how did that feel?
Oh man, it was crazy. I remember just like being in my hotel room, just like staring at this contract. Like it's such a surreal thing. You know, you always hear like the elusive contract that everybody talks about on the indies, like. That's like the thing, like you want to get signed, obviously, you know this, but like it's just crazy. I just remember staring at this contract thinking like, wow, like I made it. But I was also thinking like, this is like where the hard part starts. I remember talking to somebody else who had also gotten signed at the time, and I was like, you know, this is like where it actually gets hard, you know, because now you quote unquote made it, but you have to stay relevant. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like that's honestly the hardest part of wrestling, is staying relevant and staying
involved.
Fresh. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Something that you've done great your whole career, reinventing yourself and all that stuff. So it's hard. It is. But, you know, it's just something that as wrestlers, you got to deal with. You got to figure it out.
Yeah, that's pretty cool, though, because like you said, during you mentioned you got laid off from your other job because of COVID.
Yeah.
What was it?
I worked at a doggy daycare.
Oh, that's not a bad gig.
No, it wasn't that bad. It wasn't that bad.
But once again, that even the dogs were getting locked down, sent home, right? So
yeah, yeah.
You get laid off from that. Mm-hmm. You see the whole independent scene is dried up. I mean, it was a scary time, even for us. And I remember week after week of going out there with no people, or, you know, the 40 people that we had, and just this sucks. This is so hard.
Yeah.
So hard to do this.
And I was talking to somebody another interview about this, about how it was the first time I'd ever wore a mask. Mm. And I feel like it made it way harder that there was nobody out there, because you want to listen to the people and you want to figure out what's working for you, as far as like, does this move get a reaction? Does this little taunt that I do get a reaction? Does this not work? Whatever. And I feel like figuring out like how to wear a mask and how to, you know, because you kind of have to figure out how to emote and show emotion without your face. Yeah. You know what I mean? And that can be hard to figure out.
Very hard to do.
Yeah. And like, especially with no crowd, like you can't really, you know, because we're just stuck with the workers out there that are just going to cheer no matter what, you know, so you don't really know what works, you know. And luckily we have the internet to where, you know, you kind of see online like what's working. Oh, I liked when this guy did this or whatever. But I feel like it was very hard for me to wear a mask for the first time with no crowd, because I had no idea like what would work. And it was kind of also like a whole other character, because at the time the Dark Order was like a, you know, a dark culty, you know, heel faction. So I kind of had to be like this serious, like scary character. Whereas if I'm a heel, generally I like to be this like more cocky, arrogant kind of heel. But I was kind of trying to be more serious and all this stuff, and just doing things that I hadn't really gotten a chance to do in my career yet. And I feel like doing all that without a crowd is very hard.
Yeah, I remember even just like, you know, did this, like you said, did this selling, am I selling too long? Am I not selling long enough? I mean, am I taking enough time? Mm-hmm. Stuff that's just instinctual when you have the crowd to kind of fill in the gaps.
Yeah.
You know, okay, that one worked. Just hold on, stay there. Wait. And there's nothing. And it's just like, there's just a clock ticking of like, well, we got to get this done in 10 minutes. So we go, you know. Were you in the Dark Order right out of the bat then?
When
you
got pretty much. Okay. I had all the matches. I think I had like one more match after the Sammy match. I wrestled in a tag match against Best Friends. I did that. And then the next day, I think we did a little vignette backstage with Brody where he introduced the mask and stuff, and I put the mask on. And the first mask was even worse because it wasn't fitted to my head. It was just like these like generic masks that they had for the creepers, you know? And I was just, it's so big. There's like a picture of me online that's still like floating around online sometimes. Like when an article pops up about me, like it'll still be that picture. And it's me in just like black jeans, and I have this big ass mask on, and like you can't even see my eyes in it. It's just like on my head. So I had to have a match. I wrestled Lee Johnson. I had to have a match in that mask, and I was like, oh my God, this sucks. Because it's like moving around, you have to fix it a bunch.
We'll have to post that picture. You have to send it to me.
Oh, dude, it's the worst.
So why was everyone wearing masks at that point in time in the Dark Order? I don't remember.
I think it was just kind of like an initiation thing. Everybody except Stu was wearing a mask at the time. Silver and Reynolds, I think they didn't wear it on the entrance, but then when they wrestled, they would put it on. And me and Vance just kind of had it on all the time. So
Where did the name five come from?
I think that was Tony's idea. He was real high on the idea of Five and Dime, which would be me and Vance being a tag team. But as soon as I got signed, Vance tore his bicep.
Oh, okay.
So I think that's kind of why that never really took off. We had a few tag matches and stuff, but I think that was something that like Tony was real excited about. So he's like, five is half of 10. Ah, you know,
he probably had some kind of tag team when he was a kid in his, you know, made up wrestling league called Five and Dime.
Oh yeah, probably.
That's probably
yeah.
exactly what it was, right? Uh-huh. So you get signed in probably around the same time, but I remember the first show back, or maybe it was prior to the lockdown. Prior to the lockdown taping was when Brody came in because we did Jacksonville.
So his first show was supposed to be in Rochester, which was the week after Salt Lake, which right. was the first or was the last
yeah,
show.
We before missed it by 1 week. That's right. So we did the Salt Lake show. Then we did the double debut of Matt Hardy and Brody.
Right.
And then we went to the lockdown matches. But Brody wasn't at the Norcross tapings.
No, he was.
He was, gotcha.
Yeah, because he came out and powerbombed me.
That's right, because he was like, I'm not missing this damn thing. So
yeah.
Talk about kind of how it was with him and the influence. Because I think around that time is when, like you mentioned, Silver and Reynolds didn't get signed till later, but they were getting used in the Dark Order as well. So how did that change things when Brody came in from when Stu and Uno were kind of the leaders of the pack?
Silver and Reynolds, they kind of stopped coming because they would come from New York, right. You know, so they weren't there for a while when the pandemic started. So it was really at the beginning, it was just me, Brody and Vance. And it was just us three. And Brody was great. Like he's like I've said this before, he's one of the guys in wrestling. And there's very few of these people, maybe four or five, if I'm being generous. But like nobody has anything yeah. bad to say about him. You know what I mean? Like even before he died, it's not like one of those things where like he passes away and now everybody's talking
right.
about him.
You're totally right.
Everybody was, you know, loved him for real. Because he was just such a nice, genuine guy. And he would always watch. He watched all of the Dark Order matches, me, Vance, and Anna as well. And just like kind of give us critiques and what he kind of saw for us as, you know, characters, as how we fit in the Dark Order, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was real good at that stuff.
So, because you guys did a lot of like, I don't know, was it on Being the Elite or whatever it was with the yeah. Dark Order stuff? So talk about that, because that gave you guys a chance to have some fun.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's like some of the most fun that I've ever had in my wrestling career. Like just doing those bits and stuff. It started with Alex and Silver. Who were kind of doing like the recruitment bits or whatever. And then eventually they got Brody involved. Brody was very hesitant about it at first because he wanted to be taken as this like serious heel, you know what I mean? So he was kind of hesitant about it because it was kind of silly and stuff. But once he did a few, he was like, okay, I get this. Because he could still be taken as this serious character. It was just us that were the lackeys,
yeah,
you
right.
know what I mean?
Right.
So where, you know, he would throw the papers at us, but we, and you know, we feared him and all this stuff, but it was kind of in a more comical way. Whereas on TV, it was almost a more serious thing. Eventually, you know, we started to do more BTE type stuff on TV, which I thought was really cool. The, casket bit, if you remember, so I think he had just beat Cody for the TNT title and, me, Silver, and Reynolds and them, we bring out this casket and we're doing like this little silly dance or whatever, and we open the casket and it's supposed to be Cody Rhodes in there, but we open it and it's Vance, and he gets up and he flexes, and it, to me it was so funny because it was just like a BTE bit that like made it onto TV.
Yeah.
So it was at that point where I think Brody was like, okay, like this could really be something,
yeah.
you know, cool.
Here's why you should be getting Factor Meals. They're always delivered fresh, never frozen. They're chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and delicious. They're ready to eat in just 2 minutes. And if you go to factormeals.com/TIJ50 and use my promo code TIJ50, you'll get 50% off your first box and 20% off your next box. Plus, how good does this sound? Parmesan and sun-dried tomato chicken penne with roasted green beans. That's what I had last week before heading out to AEW. Factor makes eating delicious, quick, and easy, which is exactly what I need, especially on travel days. I ate it right out of the Factor packaging as well, so no cleanup afterwards. So you can customize your weekly meals with as much or as little as you need, and you can pause and reschedule deliveries to suit your lifestyle. And Factor is celebrating Earth Day all month long. Look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for their lowest carbon footprint meals. So head to factormeals.com/TIJ50 and use code TIJ50 to get 50% off your first month, plus 20% off your next month. That's code TIJ50 at factormeals.com/TIJ50 to get 50% off your first month, plus 20% off your next month while your subscription is active.
What were some of your favorite BTE skits that you guys did?
Oh, dude. So the one that always comes to mind first is the, so we did a bit with Sue, Trent's mom, where she comes in and she gives us snacks or whatever. And like, I don't remember, but eventually like Sue goes to throw the papers at Silver, but she throws them straight at the ground, like just totally misses them. And we all just kind of break for a second. Brody picks up the papers and gives it back to Sue, and she throws it at and tells Silver to sell Sue's papers. And he just gets down. So that one's awesome. And then there's like another one where we're in the bathroom and like, he would do this thing where he would get in our face. If he saw we were breaking, he would get in our face and, "Are you fucking crying? Are you fucking crying?" He was great. Yeah. So those are some of the good ones for sure.
How did things change after he passed away for the Dark Order?
Well, you know, we had this this kind of sympathy factor, and then we just became like these naturally over baby faces. I hate to use the term over, but you know, the crowd loved us. Yeah. Like they didn't. We were trying to be these scary heels, but it was very hard after that. So, but I think naturally, like most of the guys in that group are naturally baby faces mm-hmm. anyway. So I think it worked out for the best. But it was fun. Like I love doing all that stuff.
As you kind of move on after Brody's passing, were you still wrestling quite often? I remember just kind of more Silver and Reynolds being out there more often, but were you guys still on the show?
Yeah. So I primarily, and this is kind of how it always was, I was primarily only wrestling on Dark and stuff.
Gotcha.
And it kind of became a thing where like, yeah, I probably lost the most in the Dark Order, but I was wrestling the most of everybody because I would wrestle pretty much every week, but I would always wrestle like an Ethan Page or a Scorpio Sky or like one of these guys that's like really good. Mm. You know what I mean? And we would have like 8 to 10 minute matches, whereas like everybody else in the Dark Order, they're winning a lot more than me. But, you know, they're only getting to wrestle 3 or 4
right,
minutes.
Right.
And as the youngest guy in the group, I always looked at that as like a good thing. You know what I mean? I love the fact that I got to even though I was losing, like I loved the fact that I would get to wrestle like these really good wrestlers. I got to wrestle some of the best wrestlers in the world, like on a weekly basis. I never looked at it as a bad thing. Even though I was losing, I always looked at it as I'm getting to wrestle. You know, I'm in the same match as Pac. That's an 8 to 10 minute match. Pac is one of the best wrestlers in the world, and I get to have an 8 to 10 minute match with this guy. Like that's so cool. I don't care that I'm losing. Bryan Danielson, my second favorite wrestler of all time. Like I got to wrestle him in this building. Yeah.
Wow.
And you know,
for what, for Dark or for Elevation?
No, this was on Dynamite actually.
Well, talk about that because you mentioned earlier about how I didn't know you guys had actually wrestled.
Yeah, we wrestled in this building actually, and it was like. This is another thing where like I'll never say anything bad about Tony or AEW because like I don't have a wife, I'm not married, I don't have kids. So this was the best moment of my life, you know? Like I was in front of my hometown crowd. It's the loudest that I've ever heard my name chanted. My girlfriend, best friend, and my dad are like third row ringside. And I'm wrestling like one of my favorite wrestlers of all time. And it was like definitely just one of the coolest moments of my life. So, you know, stuff like that is like reasons that, you know, I do love AEW. I think it's great, and I loved working here for sure.
You're 24 years old. That's a pretty big,
yeah,
big one.
Yeah. I mean, I think I was 23 at the time. And it's so crazy that like I got to do that. You know what I mean? So
how was it putting together the match with Brian?
Oh, he's great. You can just tell he's like just one of the smartest guys in the world. You know what I mean? Like, and I think at the beginning he maybe didn't want to plan as much, but I was just like so nervous. I was like, maybe I'll do this thing. Maybe I'll do this thing. You know what I mean? But yeah, he's just like one of the smartest guys. And I asked him, I said, "How do you see this match going?" And he had like it all figured out what he wanted to do and stuff. So he's great.
See, that's good for you to get that opportunity because like you mentioned, I mean, a lot of guys call everything in the back. A lot of guys like kind of feeling it out there. Mm-hmm. And it's good for you to kind of be able to do both.
Yeah. Well, I was trained in Georgia. So like, you know, we have to do a lot of that down here. So I'm pretty comfortable doing that.
As far as just calling in the ring.
Yeah, just calling in the ring. We most training matches that I had, like, we're just calling it in the ring, you know, 5 minute match on the fly. It's I would like to think that I'm probably a little bit more apt at that than most wrestlers nowadays. Yeah.
Like you said, Georgia Indies, oh, yeah. Tennessee Indies, that's what it's all about.
Oh dude, yeah, for sure. I started at the WWA 4, which was more, you know, less of that. But then once I start training with QT, who's just like, I'm sure that's how he started training, you know. So a lot of our matches were on the fly.
Did you ever work with any of the kind of the Georgia, Tennessee legends when you were doing the indies? Like any of the Rock and Roll Express or any of those types of guys?
No. I wrestled Tommy Rich one time.
Oh, nice.
So that was kind of fun.
Hey, baby.
Bill Dundee. I wrestled him. I was in a match with him.
What did you do with Bill Dundee and Tommy Rich? I'm sure you weren't doing a lot of spots.
So the Tommy Rich match was pretty short. We didn't do too much. I think he
it could be long and you wouldn't do too much.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, he just like squashed me or whatever. It was like when I first started wrestling. And then the Bill Dundee match was a tag match. So I think he just ran the hot tag and that was it. But it was fun. It was cool.
Good experiences.
Yeah, definitely.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
What were kind of the last few kind of things of merit that you did here with the Dark Order? Because once again, I think the Dark Order is at a crossroads all across the board. Stu's not here anymore. Now you're gone. It's like it's almost like time to do something else with them, perchance. Mm-hmm. But before you left, what were kind of the last few things that you did?
I mean, we didn't really do too much. Like, you know, we did all the stuff with Hangman and stuff where we were just kind of like his guys where we were feuding with the Elite. So all that stuff was cool. So we did that stuff. It was still mostly just me having dark matches against guys. The last match I had here was against your boy Garcia, and it was. I love that guy. He would hate me if he heard me say that, but he's great. So I wrestled him. I wrestled QT, and like, I mean, that was pretty much it. One of my favorite things we did in the Dark Order was when Hangman left. Right when we went on the road, we had that 10-man tag or whatever, and then he left for a while. Right before his feud with Kenny culminated,
right.
And we feuded amongst ourselves, which I really liked. I thought all that stuff was cool because I thought even though a lot of it was on dark and stuff, I thought it let all of us kind of show who we are individually as characters on an actual like.
So AEW you guys were kind of getting in arguments with each other and working each other.
Yeah, yeah. I had a match with Uno, which was one of my favorites here because it was such a different response from the crowd than I've ever heard. It wasn't even like they weren't like cheering both of us. They weren't booing both of us. Like they legitimately just didn't want us to fight. Like we honestly probably shouldn't have done as much in that match as we did because they literally didn't want to see us fight the whole time. They were just chanting, please don't fight.
Really?
But yeah. It was so crazy. I'd never, like we were running spots. They weren't booing or anything. They literally just didn't want to see us fight. So it was really cool. It kind of, I feel like we told a good story in that I feel like is a little underappreciated just because I feel like a lot of people didn't see it and get to see what was going on, you know, but I think it got all of us a chance to show who we are as individual characters.
Well, and also show that people are into your act.
Right, yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, that's the thing when you talk about turning babies, especially when you have -1 out there, Brody's son is running around with the mask on. I mean, they're not going to be booing you on that, so they probably didn't want you to be fighting each other.
No, yeah, they definitely didn't. And you know, I think everybody online was just like so scared that like we were actually going to break up. But I mean, luckily
turn on
we
each
didn't.
Other.
Yeah, luckily we didn't. But yeah, those are some of my favorite matches with the Dark Order.
So now you make the decision to leave. Was it hard from a personal standpoint, having a lot of friends here? Like you mentioned, the whole Dark Order, all the stuff that you had gone through. Is that kind of hard?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's, I was talking to somebody about this earlier today, actually, that I think the hardest part was just like, you know, I'm not going to get to see all the friends that I made here every week anymore. Yeah. You know, I was on the road pretty much every week, you know, and I got to hang out with the vlog crew, Sammy and all of them. And we won't see each other as much anymore. And so that kind of sucks. But at the same time, you know, I'm sure we'll see each other again. Yeah, I think that's definitely the hardest part is leaving, you know, this quote unquote family that I have here. But it's wrestling. I'm sure we'll see each other down the road.
Well, and once again, you know, you've made the right choice for you and your career, you know, and once you made up your mind, you can't really look back.
Yeah. Thank you. I'm glad to hear
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. So what's your... What's your plan then? What, because I know you, and I want to talk, you just did a match in Impact that was really well received.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that first. So what kind of, how did you end up going into that?
So I was literally on a plane to California, which is where my girlfriend lives right now. So I was literally on a plane there, and I get a text from Scott D'Amore asking me if I wanted to come and have a badass match, quotes from him, a badass match with Mike Bailey. And I was like, absolutely, I do. So I it was like 2 days before. So I had to just like turn right around and go back to Atlanta because it was in Atlanta. And so it was very last minute, but it was so like, I was so grateful that I got to do that. And Mike Bailey is one of those guys who is like just killing it right now on the indies. He's been killing it for years, fellow Canadian.
Yeah, but now the name's getting out about him, right?
Yeah,
the word's getting out about him, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. He's like one of those guys, and he's just like so good. He's been doing it for a while, and he's just like so smart to the business and wrestling in general. So having that match with him was super cool, and I loved seeing everybody respond to it, and then everybody really liked it. It meant a lot.
And you got some time, I assume?
Yeah. We went about 10 minutes, and it was for the X Division Championship, which is like one of those things I grew up watching, like, oh, dude, like, these guys, like, this is what I want to do, you know what I mean? So, yeah.
No, that's cool that, you know, your first match kind of out of here is a match, a highlighted match with Speedball and Impact Television. The fact they reach out to you, that's a good sign.
Yeah. I have no idea what the future holds for me, but, like, Impact was great. I'm also doing New Japan shows out in California, so nice. Like that stuff is really cool too.
So let me ask you this: how did you get involved with the New Japan? Are you just picking up the phone and calling, going back to basics, or
I literally just was like, "Hey, Rocky, you think maybe I could come in for Strong one time?" And he was like, "Sure, man." Mm-hmm. And that was it. It was at AEW, so I was like, "Okay, cool. Might as well just ask." You know, it doesn't hurt to ask. Never hurts to ask.
So talk about those shows. Are there tapings? Do they do it in front of people? Or,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Sometimes they do them in front of bigger crowds. The ones in California is a little smaller venue, but it's still really cool to just like wrestle in that ring that I've seen on TV so much, you know. Those tapings are really cool. I really enjoy doing both Impact and New Japan. Yeah, they're just dope.
There's a lot of great guys in that New Japan.
Oh yeah, there's so many guys like on in both the X Division and Impact and the juniors in New Japan right now, like both of those divisions are killing it, and I feel like those are both places that I feel like I could really strive, you know.
If you do good in Strong, is there kind of like a carrot dangling of you get to go tour New Japan?
I'm only doing my second show. I'm doing my second show next month with New Japan. So, you know, I don't know. Who knows where it'll lead? I feel like a few guys have gone from Strong to actually going over to Japan. So that would be really cool. And that's another thing like that I'm super excited to do is just like travel. In October, I'm debuting in England and Canada. So it's like, it's like shit like that. Like, that's why I wanted to, you know, spread my wings, sure. So to speak. So
let me ask you this, as when you leave, you know, the company and the contract and all that stuff, how do you get the word out? How are people finding you? Are they all contacting you from England and Canada, or do you have like a come to this email and book me, or like how do you kind of build yourself up after you've been in the big leagues here?
So a lot of it nowadays is just like on Twitter, you know, like people
that's
just like,
great.
Yeah. People just hit me up on Twitter. And it is a lot of me. I have to reach out too. It's not like I'm just this, like all of a sudden I'm just automatically like a big star or whatever. I have to hit up these guys and like really, I feel like I really have to grind to like try and get my name out there that like, hey, like I'm willing to travel. I'm willing to do this and that. Because I feel like, and I feel like this is another reason to kind of leave AEW. As a part of AEW, I feel like there's this kind of notion that, you know, you're going to be like worth a lot of money and like you're going to be maybe like a diva or whatever. But I'm not. I really just like, I legitimately just want to wrestle and I just want to show everybody how good I am, how good I think I am. So like that's the big thing. So I feel like a lot of these places are kind of tentative about reaching out to me because maybe they think I'm, you know, going to be whatever about it. But no, I legitimately just want to wrestle and I just want to show everybody how good I am. So it is a lot of me reaching out to them. I do have like an email that they can email, but that's kind of just for looks, you know what I mean? Yeah. Just so I kind of look professional. But yeah.
Do you have like, is your calendar filling up now?
Oh yeah. Like it's like, I have the whole like notes app where it's just like all the dates and there's so many, it's cool to see that. You know what I mean? Just like
pleasantly surprised. Like when you leave, you're like, is anyone going to want me or?
Yeah. Oh, definitely. I mean, I was a little concerned that like once the word of me leaving got out, that maybe no one was going to care. But, you know, luckily enough, it seemed like a good amount of people cared. So, like I said, I did build up a pretty decent following through BT, through the vlogs, and through AEW, you know what I mean? So, like, when the word got out that I left, it kind of was a big deal, you know what I mean?
Sounds like you had, you know, obviously that sounds like you had some pretty good matches along the way where people would see that too.
Yeah.
You know, even if you're talking about Dark, that's still, you know, 250,000 people watching that, 300,000, 400,000 watching it. So
right.
The word gets out.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
Do you have any aspirations at all of WWE at all, trying to get into that scene?
You know, I think about it sometimes and, you know, I don't know if I'm like their cup of tea right now, but then I also see like, you know, that they are bringing back some indie guys into the NXT scene. So, you know, it's something I've kind of thought about, but I've never really seriously considered it, but you know, I don't know. You never know. I think for now, I just kind of want to figure out like who Allen Angels really is, because like, I think I have the wrestling part down. I think the hard part is the character and the personality and all that stuff. And I think I'm getting it more and more and more as I'm doing these indie matches where I'm getting to really show like, you know, what I can do in these 15, 20 minute matches. But I think I'm also starting to figure out who Allen Angels is as a character. But I think for now, at least a year or so, I'd like to just kind of do my own thing and figure that out.
Just wrestle too.
Yeah,
because exactly. You're right though. That is the eternal question. What is the character of Allen Angels? Who is this guy?
Yeah, you know? It's hard, you know. And I don't know. I was talking to somebody. Orange Cassidy. You know, he's one of those guys. He's like, you know, I've been doing this. I did this for 15 years until I figured out what I was. So it's like, you know, I'd really like to just figure that out. I think.
It'll come, especially with the more reps you do, the more traveling you do, the more experiences you have. Mm-hmm. Last couple of questions. Is there some like dream matches for you out there on the indie scene that you want to have? Some guys you want to work with?
Yeah. Oh, I hate this question because I always blank when I think of this. But like Nick Wayne is a guy
buzz about him.
Yeah, he just got signed to some sort of developmental deal here, which is really cool.
16 or something.
Yeah, exactly. So like I'd love to have a match with him in the future. Takeshita, who is a guy, I don't know if he's actually signed here or not, but you know, I'd love to have a match with him at some point. He's doing a bunch of indies right now, so I'd love to wrestle him. Who else? There's like guys like Blake Christian and Alex Zane, and I've actually never wrestled JD Drake, who's a guy who works here, but like he does indies, and I'd love to get in the ring with him. Yeah, like I said, I always blank on these questions, but like Alex Shelley and Chris Sabin are like guys that I've always really wanted to work as well. So yeah.
What about England? How long are you going over there for?
So right now it's looking like just the weekend. Gotcha. Because I got to come back over here and I've other dates I've already committed to, but I would love to do like a whole like month or so there. You know, I think that would be cool. And I saw a bunch of guys from Impact and stuff. We just went over to Australia. So like going over there and doing a whole tour there would be really cool too.
Well, there's lots of stuff coming up, I'm sure. Last question for you. What's your favorite match that you ever had?
That's such a hard question. Cause I have like matches that I like because of the match content, and then there's matches that I like because of the sentimental value. My first one that I would say for sentimental value would be the Bryan Danielson match, because it was in my hometown, in front of my hometown crowd, one of my favorite wrestlers of all time. So that would go at the top of my list. I would say that for sure. I mean, as far as like the actual wrestling content, I feel like there's so many that it's just kind of hard to like separate them all, you know. Mm-hmm. Like I had a match with Garcia, like the last match I had here, which was so fun, and that guy is so awesome. Mm-hmm. So like that would probably go up there. I've had a match with Lee Moriarty that was really good. The match I had with Uno was really fun. So yeah,
lots of good ones to come though, man.
I hope so. That's the goal, man.
On a worldwide basis, Allen Angels is out there, baby.
Yeah, I try. Thank you, Chris. I appreciate you having me, man.
That was awesome, man. Thank you.